Welcome. My special gratitude to my dear God brothers and God sisters who have come from distant places throughout the world to bless all of us this evening and for this yatra. My sincere obeisances to His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj. His Holiness Bhaktivinod Maharaj. His Grace Yadavacharya Prabhu. His Grace Anuttama Prabhu. His Grace Udayananda Prabhu. Her Grace Nartaki Devi. Sri Ram Tulsi Devi. And His Grace Gorvani Prabhu is also with us this evening. And I wish I could say the names of all of you, but I'll say them all at once. Vanchakalpatrubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo. This evening we will speak something on the subject of Kanyakumari. It is the... Could everyone hear? You say Hari Bol whether you hear or not. They cannot hear. Kanyakumari is the southernmost tip of the subcontinent of India, the confluence of three oceans, the Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal, and the Arabian Sea. And I would like to expand on the subject of the fourth ocean that we discussed last night. Today there is a fourth ocean merging into the three oceans. It is the unlimited, fathomless ocean of the heart of compassion of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And all of us are like little waves and aquatics swimming in that ocean. And today we have come to this holy place. Krishna's Karuna Sindhu, which means He is an ocean of compassion. That ocean is so deep, without boundaries. It factually encompasses all material, spiritual worlds, all of existence. And I welcome Her Grace Kamagiri Devi also, who has descended from Columbus, Ohio. And just as the sun evaporates the water from the ocean to create cloud, the cloud is carried by the wind inland to provide fresh water, life-giving water, for all living beings. similarly from this infinite ocean of Krishna's compassion. He sends by the breeze of his own grace his loving devotees to shower us with that water, to shade us from the burning sun of material existence, to quench our thirst for real meaning, real pleasure, and real love. In 1510, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this place, bathed in the confluence, visited the different temples. Previous to that, Lord Nityananda Prabhu came, and according to the Bhagavat Purana, previous to that, Lord Balaram came. It is by grace that we are eligible to have facility in association of devotees by which we can purify our hearts. And as the heart becomes pure, the eternal light of the love of Krishna that is dormant within the heart is awakened and shines for the whole world. Behind us, or in front of you, is a rock that is visited by many hundreds and thousands of pilgrims every year. On that rock are the footprints of the goddess Parvati. It's also the place that Swami Vivekananda meditated in 1892. And many of you will be visiting the temple of Kanyakumari, which is surrounded by four very strong walls and is right by the seashore. For thousands of years, this has been considered one of the holy places. And by bathing there, one is cleansed of one's negative karma. With your permission, I'd like to tell you a story of how that has come to be. At one time long ago, the Asuras conquered the Devas and tortured, persecuted saintly people, plundered and exploited to build up their own empires, to satisfy their greed, their lust, their envy, and their arrogance. Bhumi Devi, an expansion of the feminine potency of the Lord, or Mother Earth, approached Lord Vishnu to help her children. Lord Vishnu told her that she should have the Devas perform a yajna to the goddess Parvati. Banasura performed great austerities and received a benediction from Lord Brahma that he could only be killed by an unmarried virgin girl. And there's not that many unmarried virgin girls that are great warriors that can face the king of the demons in battle. So Lord Vishnu wanted to honor the benediction given by Brahma in a similar way as he did in regard to Hiranyakashipu. The devas performed a yajna and Parvati appeared in the form of a very little girl, Kanyakumari. She told the devas, just be patient, let me grow up a little, and then I'll satisfy all of your wishes. She came here, and feeling great separation from her consort, her eternal consort, Lord Shiva, she performed tapasya. Nearby there is a temple called Suchindra, where Lord Shiva at the time was residing. Very much attracted by his natural love for Kanyakumari, he proposed to her for marriage, which she immediately agreed, and they set the time for a particular date at midnight. Narada Muni, who is such a liberated personality, he has the authority to do the most unorthodox, incomprehensible, and bewildering things, all for the ultimate good of everyone and the pleasure of Krishna. He understood that if Kanyakumari marries Lord Shiva, then she can't, then according to the boon of Brahma, she's not allowed to kill Banasura. And that's why she came. At least one reason. So he approached Kanyakumari and said, you know Banasura has mystic powers. What if he's disguised himself as Lord Shiva and proposed to you? So ask something of him that only Lord Shiva can do. So she said, I want you to bring me coconuts with no eyes, mangoes without seeds, and bale leaves without veins. And within seconds, Lord Shiva produced them. So the night of the marriage, Lord Shiva left Suchindra and was coming toward where we are today. And Narada Muni had to somehow or other stop this marriage. So he went on the pathway and took the form of a rooster. And he crowed. Everyone crowed like rooster. Louder, louder, please. Even the females are cawing like roosters tonight. This is proof that we do not discriminate. Anyways, it was very well done, thank you. I have to keep them awake somehow or other. So roosters crow just before the dark of night breaks and dawn appears. So by Narada Muni's potency, Lord Shiva was thinking, it's almost sunrise, that means I missed the auspicious time of midnight. So he turned back. Meanwhile, you may ask, if Lord Shiva's all-knowing, why didn't he know what time it was? Because Kanyakumari was supposed to fight with Banasura. This is Lord Shiva's Achintya Shakti. He could know and not know. He doesn't need a watch. He's Ishwara. He's the Lord of this material creation. Time is working under his control. But by Narada Muni's influence, he was mixed up. And he went back. And Kanyakumari was waiting and waiting. It was after midnight. She waited. Finally, the sun rose, and there was a big feast cooked for the wedding, and nothing was there. So she threw all the food, and according to the legend, it became sand and seashells on the shore of the three oceans. From there, she sat and performed tapasya in separation, waiting for Lord Shiva to come. And she's still waiting. Meanwhile, Banasura heard about her. And when he saw her beauty, he was infatuated. Proposed to marry her. She told him, "I have given my heart to Shankar, and I can give it to no one else." Nobody had ever refused Banasura before. So angry, he lifted his sword. He said, "Either you surrender to me or you die." Now please understand, she was just a very innocent, simple little virgin girl sitting on a rock. And here is Banasura, the king of all the asuras, with his sword drawn, giving her an order. But Kanyakumari, she responded by appearing as Kali. And she had her weapons too. There was a good fight. The battle went on and on. And ultimately, Kanyakumari, with her chakra, she killed Banasura. But just before Banasura died, he repented. He became purified by her association. And he prayed for a benediction that let myself and all other people for all time to come be absolved from all their sins if they bathe here in the confluence of the three oceans. She granted that benediction. He took his bath in the ocean and died. And since that time, tens and millions of people come here to bathe in these sacred waters. And for us, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and so many other great souls have come. So it is a very holy place. The deity of Kanyakumari, in one hand, is holding a japa mala as she's waiting in separation. It is said that the deity that has a very beautiful blue form was originally installed by Parasuram, the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, long ago. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada, he has taught us a very internal understanding of the temple of Kanyakumari. For Vaishnavas, we see that the Murti is also Lakshmi Devi, who was born from the ocean of milk, and who is now residing next to the ocean. He explains how in Kurukshetra, the elder gopis is the place where the elder gopis are especially remembered for their love and separation from Krishna. And in Kanyakumari, the younger unmarried gopis are remembered. In the mood of Vipralamba, or love and separation, is very similar, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as Sri Jagannath Puri. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, who came to taste the sweetness of the love of Sri Radha, and to share that love with the world. When he was residing in Puri, he manifested those feelings of love in separation, the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan. During the Rath Yatra, he was in the mood of Sri Radha and the gopis bringing Krishna from Kurukshetra back to Sri Vrindavan town. And in the Gambira, he was practically constantly absorbed in the highest, deepest ecstasies of love and separation. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells us that the gopis, in their pure, spotless spiritual love for Shamsundar, Gopinath, they worshipped Katyayani to gain Krishna as their husband. Kanyakumari and Katyayani are the same personality. So for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we meditate in this place as a place of Vipralamba Seva, a place where we remember the gopis of Vrindavan and their spotless love for Krishna, and especially how it was revealed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the world. In Vrindavan, the forest of Bandiravan, there is a murti of Subal, or Sridhama, I'm sorry, a murti of Sridhama. When Krishna was leaving Vrindavan with Balaram on the chariot of Akrura, he told Sridhama that I will be back in a few days. Sridhama said, I will wait. And under a banyan tree in the forest of Bandiravan, Sridhama waited and kept waiting and waiting and waiting in the pangs of separation from Sri Krishna. For 4,500 years he waited. When Lord Chaitanya visited Vrindavan, as he entered into the Bandiravan forest, he cried out with tears of love in his eyes, Sridhama, Sridhama, I have come. You have been waiting so long. I have come, I have come. And Lord Chaitanya, in the mood of Sri Krishna, embraced the deity of Sridhama. At Govardhan, when Krishna was departing, one Gopa named Lota Baba. He said, Krishna, I'm not going to eat anything or drink anything until you return. Krishna said, I'll be back in a few days. And at the tail, Govardhan is shaped like a peacock. And the tail is called Punchari. And there Lota Baba has been waiting over 5,000 years. And there's a murti for him that has been established there. And interestingly, the murti is quite heavy set. And he hasn't eaten anything for so many years. His love and separation nourishes him. So there are many such deities who are in this mood of Vipralamba. And here Kanyakumari is waiting, waiting and waiting for Lord Shiva's return. On the subject of love and separation, in honor of our South Indian Yatra, I would like to speak a story about two of the great Alwars of the Sri Sampradaya. Andal, among the 12 Alwars, was a lady who from her birth manifested a very similar love in separation of Krishna like that of the gopis of Braja. The story goes like this. This is explained in the great scriptures of the Sri Sampradaya. In the line of very high, respected and pure-hearted Brahmin priests was Mukunda and Padmadevi. They had a son named Vishnu Chitar, who was also known as Peri Alwar. From his birth, he had such natural quality of love and devotion to Krishna. Like little Prahlad, he was spontaneously attracted. He did not require rational, philosophical proof of what the goal is life. He did not require sensual observations which would establish and confirm his faith. Although he honored the scriptures and was eager to hear from them, his faith, his love was already there. And the expression of love is naturally the desire to serve. Vishnu Chitar loved Krishna, the son of Nanda and Yashoda, who lived in the simple forests of Vrindavan as a cowherd boy and plays forever in that forest with the gopas and the gopis. If he's here, I'd also like to welcome my dear godbrother, His Grace Narottamananda Prabhu. I heard he's here. I don't know where, but please everyone say Hari Ram. He fixed his mind on Krishna. Narottamananda and Vishnu Chitar. And when he heard the story of how Lord Krishna, after he left Vrindavan, being invited by King Kamsa for the wrestling match with Chanura and Mustika. Krishna was on his way to that wrestling arena. And he was in the high road where the majesty of the king would go. And Krishna decided to go off that high road onto a very small alleyway because he was searching for a simple maker of flower garlands named Sudama. In the Vishnu Purana, his name is Malakara. We know the story of how Malakara or Sudama, when he saw Krishna, he brought him in his simple little shop and offered him the very best of all of his garlands. And then for the pleasure of Krishna, all the rest of his garlands he gave to Krishna's friends and asked for absolutely nothing in return. Because he understood the ultimate perfection of all of his desires was to serve and please Krishna. On the path of bhakti, the end and the means to receive the end are the same. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, what do you hope to get from chanting Hare Krishna? Srila Prabhupada said, the goal of chanting Hare Krishna is to chant Hare Krishna. On the path of pure devotional servants, it is not that we chant thinking that that will bring us to a place where there's no need for service, where there's no need for an ishtadev, where there is no need to chant the holy names. Golokera premadana harinam sankirtana. The holy name of Krishna has descended from the highest realm of the spiritual world, Goloka Brindavan. And in the spiritual world, eternally, the purest, most highly, intensely loving, liberated souls are forever chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
The reward of service is simply that we have served. Vrindavan Das Thakur in his Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat has said, the highest position one can possibly achieve, beyond a king, beyond a demigod, beyond a saint, beyond a liberated soul, the highest post is to have the title Das, a servant of the Lord. When the gopis sang their beautiful song in separation from Krishna on the banks of the Yamuna in Vrindavan on the night of the Rasa Leela, Krishna again appeared before them and told them that for your love and your service, I cannot repay you. Even with all that I have, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartate, Krishna is the proprietor of everything in all material and spiritual worlds. Krishna said, even in a lifetime of Brahma, with all that I have, I cannot repay you for your love. I'm unable to do so. Please be satisfied just with that loving service in itself. That itself is the highest treasure. The opportunity to serve. When Sri Hanumanji jumped across the Indian Ocean, delivered the message of Ram to Sita, burned a major part of the city, jumped back and reported what he had done for Ram. Ramchandra was overwhelmed because he was living without a kingdom, in exile, on a mountain called Malyavanta in Kishkindha Kshetra. Sri Ram said, I want to reward you. You have risked your life. You have endeavored with such love, with such courage. And you have pacified the heart of Sita. I owe you everything, but I have nothing to give you. All I have is my embrace. And Sri Ram embraced Hanuman with tears of gratitude. And for Sri Hanuman, that is the ultimate reward. Just to please Krishna. So Sudama, that was the ultimate reward. He didn't want anything. He just wanted to please Krishna. And he was taking great risk, because he was living in the regime of Kamsa. Kamsa hated Krishna. Kamsa practically every day was sending asuras into Vrindavan to kill Krishna. And here is one of his own residents in his own kingdom giving free garlands to Krishna and surrendering his life to Krishna. He was taking risk. Kamsa had spies everywhere. But he didn't care. This is love. And Krishna gave Sudama benediction that all of his desires would be fulfilled in this life, and afterward he would go back home, back to Godhead for spiritual perfection. So Vishnu Chittar, he was so inspired by the Lord's grace to the most menial common person. And in his own humility, he wanted to be like Malakara. So in a village, Sri Viliputur, he had a deity named Vattapatra Shayana, which is Kararavindara Padaravinda Mukaravinde Vinivesayantam. We read about in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Maitreya Rishi was in that ocean of dissolution, he saw on a banyan tree leaf little baby Gopal floating around, sucking on his toe. And our acharyas tell us that devotees are in so much happiness tasting the sweetness of the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, which means tasting the sweetness of serving Krishna with love, that Krishna wants to taste what his lotus feet are like. The supreme absolute truth, Vishnu wants to taste that. So he took the form of little baby. And I guess little babies naturally like to suck on their toes. Don't laugh, because you were all little babies some. We have all tasted that experience. But by Srila Prabhupada's grace, now we get to taste the experience of the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna. And sweeter than that, is the dust of the feet of those who love Krishna. Vishnu Chittor, or Peri Alwar, decided to dedicate his life to growing flowers in a garden and making garlands to offer to his deity, Thakurji. Menial service. He was living a very simple life, digging with a spade on his hands and knees, planting flowers, pulling weeds, plucking flowers, and making garlands. Completely satisfied. The ultimate experience and the ultimate goal of his life was simply that he could offer that garland and place it on the form of the Lord, and the Lord would accept it. He wanted nothing else. One day, in Madurai, there was a king whose name was Ballabhadev. He conquered all the provinces around him, and he was a righteous king who loved his citizens, and his citizens loved him. In the spirit of Lord Ramchandra, sometimes he would disguise himself incognito to wander around the kingdom just to see what people were thinking, what they were doing, and how they were living. He came upon one Brahmin who was sleeping. He was very interested to hear something from this Brahmin, so he woke him up. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I have just come from a pilgrimage to the Ganga in North India. I'm a Brahmin." The king said, "Can you tell me some words of enlightenment that will help me in my life?" The Brahmin said, "8 months a year, a man will labor so that he can enjoy happiness for the 4 months of the rainy season. Half the day a person will labor so that he can enjoy coming home at night." Similarly, this human form of life is meant to pursue self-realization, so that we can enjoy the highest liberation after we die. This really had an impact on the king. He was thinking, "There's nothing of this world that I have not achieved. I have no wants, I have no needs. But I haven't done anything for my own spiritual life." He went to his chief minister, who was a learned scholar, and asked him, "Please tell me how I could prepare myself for spiritual realization." The minister said, "According to the Dharma Shastras, you should bring an assembly of great learned scholars, pundits. Have them come together for a debate on spiritual subject matter based on the authority of the Vedas. And whoever wins, you should inquire from him and follow what he says." The king called for all the great pundits, scholars from his entire kingdom. They were all eager to win this debate. There was a flag of the kingdom, which was in the assembly hall, and the king put a very priceless treasure, wrapped it in cloth, put it and tied it with a rope, and hoisted it to be up near the flag. And whoever was to win that debate, he would bring down the treasure and give it to them, and they would cut it. Meanwhile, back at Sri Viliputur, Vishnu Chittar was performing his simple service of gardening and making malas and offering it to the Lord, completely satisfied. One evening, he had a dream. The Lord spoke to him. He said, I want you to go to Madurai. There is going to be a debate of the greatest scholars in the entire kingdom. You go there and speak my words on my behalf for the welfare of all of humanity. Vishnu Chittur was struck with wonder. This is impossible. What? He said. I am poor. I am illiterate. How possibly can I enter into a tournament with the greatest intellectuals of the entire country? My dear Lord, look! My hands! They're dirty. They're cut up. They're calloused from just working in the fields day and night. I'm just a poor gardener. I'm fit just for humble service. And you want me to stand amongst the wisest men of the kingdom? I'm not learned in the Vedas. And I'm supposed to challenge literary geniuses? Why are you asking such an impossible thing from me? The Lord responded in the dream, "Why do you worry? I will do everything for you. Arise and go." As soon as he opened his eyes from sleep, he took his bath and began the journey. There was no question. This is faith. When he arrived in the kingdom, in the royal assembly, King Balabhadev, he understood that Vishnu Chittar is coming from a hierarchy of priests. So he stood up and gave him a very warm reception. Meanwhile, the other pundits, they resented this. Why is the king honoring him? He is a dullard. He's a fool. He does not even know one letter of Vedanta. The minister of the king asked Vishnu Chittar to speak. He stood up after praying to the Lord of his heart to empower him. Like Valmiki Muni, who was just a simple hunter, a dacoit, he was not learned in any way. But by the mercy of Narada Muni and by the instruction of Lord Brahma, he presented to the world the Ramayana. Or like little Dhruva Maharaj, who was only 5 years old and had no education. He was living in the forest by the grace of Narada also. And when Vishnu appeared to him, he wanted to offer prayers. but he didn't know any. And the Lord touched his head with a conch shell, and by doing so, empowered him to speak such beautiful Sanskrit poetry, so deep with wisdom and devotion, that now, even yugas later, the greatest scholars and saints are repeating and attaining perfection by doing so. Vishnu Chittar stood up and said, "The conclusion of all the Vedas is very clear. It is self-evident. The beginning of the alphabet is the letter A. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, of letters, I am A. A, according to the Pancharatra, is the symbol of Vishnu. Krishna, or Vishnu, is Param Brahman, the Supreme Brahman. He is Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He is the ultimate liberation can be achieved simply by meditating on Krishna. Manmanabhava madbhakto madhyashim nam namaskuru mame vaishashin shatyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me. You will come to me without fail. This is confirmed by even the greatest sages, Manu, Parasara, and Vyas. The conclusion of all dharma is to always remember the Lord and never forget Him. So simple. He elaborated for quite some time on this subject. When the king and all of these great pundits heard this simple gardener, this Malawala, speaking with such profound realization, conviction, and wisdom, they were stunned. There was complete silence, and right in front of everybody's eyes, spontaneously, without anybody doing anything, the treasure just lowered. Slowly went lower, lower, lower from the flag of the king, and came right in front of the hand of Vishnu Chittar, who cut it. At that point, King Balabhadev and everyone else, they applauded. And the king called for a royal procession. He escorted the simple gardener to a royal elephant, highly decorated, put him on top of the elephant. And he called for canopies and trumpets, conch shells, umbrellas, all sorts of decorations and wreaths. The whole capital of his city was decorated for this procession. He called the entire town with musicians and dancers, and the pundits were chanting mantras. And here is little Vishnu Chittar, feeling himself to be a totally empty vessel who was filled with the grace of God, not claiming anything to be his own. As this procession was moving along the city and he was riding on the elephant, Lord Vishnu himself was so pleased to see everyone honoring his pure-hearted devotee, he wanted to come himself to see. Vishnu Chittar looked up in the sky, and there he saw Lord Narayan. With a beautiful bluish complexion, dressed in yellow like lightning, magnificent lotus-like eyes, sitting on Garuda, his bird carrier, and on his side was Lakshmi Devi, He saw Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Vayu, Agni, Surya, Chandra, Yamaraj, the devas were all worshipping him. And Lakshmi and Narayan were looking down at Vishnu Chitara and smiling. When he saw them, he was stunned. He had no pride. He was overwhelmed with love. And he began to pray. My Lord, you are all-knowing. You are the protector of everything and everyone within all of creation. You are above time and you are all pure. But you have come here. This is a place where everything is being devoured by time. You have left your abode, which was filled of unalloyed pure souls, to a place filled with evil, envious, corrupt people who are full of impurities. Compared to your eternal abode, this universe is hell. And you have come here. My Lord, I fear that your coming to this world will cause you inconvenience. Vishnu Chitar, his love caused him to forget the ultimate supremacy of the Lord. And he began to pray for blessings upon the Lord of his life. Let not your beauty or your strength in any way be marred by this corrupt, horrible place of the material world. And then he prayed, Let me bless you, my Lord, as a parent blesses a child. I do not want to feel like a lover for a beloved or a wife to a husband. I pray for this benediction. Let me bless you and give you benedictions like a mother for her child. Intense love begets such emotions. Intense love causes the protector and the protected to change positions. The Sri Vaishnava Acharyas explain it in this way. And this is very much in harmony with the concepts of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That when we meditate on God as the omnipotent, omnipresent protector of everyone, then we see Him as our protector. But when we meditate on the aspect of the Lord's tenderness, softness, and sweetness, then the intensity of love that arises from those feelings . We want to protect the Lord. This is the nature of spiritual rasa. Many examples of this are throughout the scriptures and the histories. Dasarath Maharaj, he worried about Ram. He knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when Vishwamitra Muni asked let me take Ram to the forest.
Asuras, agents of Ravana, are disturbing my sacrifices.
Dasarath Maharaj was at the yajna where he saw Vishnu, and he knew that Vishnu would become his son. But still, Ram was just a teenager, and due to the intensity of his affection, like a father for a son, he was worried sick. Impossible. How could my son fight against asuras? Don't take him from me. And Kausalya, Ram's mother, although she knew his supreme position, she always blessed him by protecting him. That was the nature of her love. As was Janaka toward Sita. As was Vishwamitra Muni toward Ram. Maharaj Guha, when he heard that Lord Ramchandra was exiled from his kingdom, he wanted to give his whole kingdom to him. But when Ram refused it, he made a bed of leaves and was feeling such intense sorrow that Ram was going to have to live in this way, in jungles full of rakshasas and inconveniences. And the great Hanuman, his affection, he wasn't thinking, well, Ram, you're God, get Sita yourself, you don't need me. In one sense, that's transcendental knowledge, is it not? Krishna's the controller of all controllers. He's the source of Narasimhadev. He's the source of the universal form. Hanuman knew that Ram is the Lord of all lords. Hanuman was the greatest scholar of the scriptures. Why didn't he just apply transcendental knowledge? Ram, your expansion of Mahavishnu, you just inhale, and the entire cosmic manifestation is destroyed. You exhale, and it's all manifested. You know everything. You know everything past, present, and future. You're the Paramatma in everyone's heart, including Ravana. Surely you know where he is. Yes? You're looking for him? You want us to find him? You know where he is. You're in his heart. You're in everyone's heart. You're in between. You're in between every atom. You're all-knowing. You're omnipresent. You're omnipotent. You're the supreme. You're the absolute truth. Hanuman knew all that stuff. But due to the intensity of his love, his heart was churning that Ram is feeling separation from Sita, and I must satisfy Ram. I must find her. And how he endeavored, how he risked his life, how he performed every impossible feat to satisfy Ram. Devotion is a higher principle than knowledge, although all knowledge is included in real devotion. Intense love goes beyond and creates rasa, loving relationship. In these cases, Sugriva, Hanuman, they understood him to be the supreme personality of Godhead, but they still worried about him. They understood that Sita is the flawless goddess of fortune, but they worried about her. They cried for her. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Murari Gupta to the Mahaprakash in Srivas Thakur's house, he revealed himself as Lord Ram and said, Murari, look, I'm Ram, and here's Lakshman, and there's Sita. Don't you remember Lakshman?
When he was pierced by the javelin of Ravana and Indrajit, you jumped all the way to Himalayas and picked up the Gandhamadana mountain and jumped all the way back. Don't you remember how you have done this to save the life of Lakshman?
Save the life of God?
Yes. And here is Sita, your beloved, supreme, ultimate object of devotion. Don't you remember how you wept a shoreless ocean of tears seeing her being tortured emotionally in the Ashokavan of Ravana? Don't you remember, Murari? You are Hanuman.
And Murari looked at himself and saw he had a tail. And fell to the ground unconscious. This is bhakti. The nature of love for the purpose of intensifying and deepening the intimacy of love between the Lord and the devotee. Sometimes the Lord inspires his devotee to be his protector, to receive blessings. And this principle was manifested in its ultimate state in Sri Vrindavan Dham, where Nanda and Yashoda, their love for Krishna was so intense, although they had the highest realizations of the perfection of the soul and the supremacy of the Lord, their love completely eclipsed any sense of acceptance that Krishna could be God. They simply loved him because he was Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami explains that Yashoda Mai and Rohini, as they were seeing little Krishna and Balaram as babies getting in so much mischief, it said they were constantly immersed in the ecstasy of anxiety. Does that sound like a contradiction? Because usually we don't want to be in anxiety. Vaikuntha means the place of no anxiety. And here we find the highest level of love of God is full of anxiety. But because it's anxiety of love for Krishna, forgetting Krishna's supremacy to feel, I must bless Krishna, I must protect Krishna. Or in the gopi situation was when Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya, all the residents of Vrindavan were on the verge of death. The intensity of love. This culminates in the Brijabasis. Yashoda and Rohini were always thinking, Krishna and Balaram, they may be hit by the horns of a bull, they may be stepped on by the heavy hooves of a cow, they may crawl into a thorn, they may be scratched by a monkey, they may be bit by a dog, they may be under the heat of the sun. Now in Vrindavan, everything and everyone was only there for Krishna's pleasure, but still, Rohini and Yashoda, they worried. This was the nature of Vishnu Chittar's love on that level. That as he saw Vishnu in the sky, he offered him blessings. He prayed that the Lord would find no inconvenience while in this material world. And what the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas tell us was so profound is that this was not just an occasional feeling he had. It was his constant bhava, his constant feeling of love. A love that is too deep for words to explain, and even too deep for the emotions of our tears. God's love for his children is inconceivable. So why cannot God make his children's love for him inconceivable? I will say that again. God's love for us is inconceivable. So why can't God make our love for him inconceivable? The Lord allows us to love him in this way. To wish God joy. To wish God all perfections in his desires. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, Lord Chaitanya in great anxiety approached Srila Haridas Thakur and said, "How will we deliver all these conditioned souls?" And Haridas Thakur, seeing the Lord's anxiety, told him that, "My Lord, just by your coming here and chanting the holy name, everyone has been delivered." Such prayers in this mood of intense love extends to all living beings. We find devotees who have this intense affection. They're praying for everyone. Inconceivable prayers. Because they know the heart of Krishna. Vasudev Dutt prayed, "Let me take the sins of every living being in the entire universe on my head and let them all go back to your abode, Krishna, forever." In the same way, as we make spiritual advancement, we will naturally pray, "Let every living being get your love, Krishna. Let every living..." As we begin to taste the sweetness of Krishna's love, our prayer is, "Let every living entity, every one of my brothers and sisters, all species of life, let everyone taste this love for Krishna." And little Prahlad, 5 years old, he tasted that love for Krishna. And when he was asked by Narasimhadev, "I will give you any benediction, what would you like?" Prahlad said, "I don't need anything. I'm tasting your kindness. Let me remain in this world as long as anyone is in forgetfulness of you, and let me give my life and soul to help them to taste the sweetness of your love." This is the nature of compassion. Our beloved Srila Prabhupada, when he was on the Jaladuta, he was writing a prayer after several heart attacks, seasickness, not knowing anyone, where he was going, not having any money. He wasn't just praying for his family back in Calcutta. He wasn't just praying for his associates in Vrindavan. He was praying for all living beings. He was praying, he was risking his life for people he never met before. And what a surprise it was when he actually met these people. Prabhupada was asked on a television station, "Swamiji, what is a hippie?" Because Prabhupada said, "My miracle is to make hippies into happies. And the person said, what is a hippie? It was an American television show. Prabhupada said, you know better than me. And then he paused and answered. He said, something extraordinary. Living in Vrindavan, never saw anything like this. He traveled around the world 12 times, not asking anything from anyone. All he asked, just accept Krishna and be happy and chant the holy names. After being honored by the king, and after having the darshan and blessing Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi in the sky, Vishnu Chittar was very eager to go back to his village to resume his service to his lord. Patapatrashayi, of making garlands. He was thinking, my service has been disturbed for so many days. But I was on a mission. He imagined himself to be a cowherd man in Vrindavan, in that simple spirit. And that is how he lived his life, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. One day, he was digging in a special garden he had for Tulasi. As he dug the earth, he discovered out from the earth came a beautiful little female baby child. She was completely covered with dirt. Just like Maharaj Janak uncovered Sita from the earth, Vishnu Chittar uncovered Andal, one of the most worshipped and praised of saints of all the different traditions of South India. Her beauty was incredible. Enchanting eyes, lovely curling hair. Her smile beamed with affection. He understood that this is a divine personality. And he raised her as his own daughter. She was very playful. But knowing of her divine birth in a garden of tulsi plants, he never checked her. He let her do absolutely anything and everything she wanted. Every day Vishnu Chittar would pick many, many flowers and many, many tulsi leaves and weave them together to form a beautiful garland. He did it with his own hands. And the perfection of his day was the moment when he could place that garland around the neck of his beloved Lord. When her father was out in the garden doing the simple gardening work, Andal would come into his little puja room and take the garland meant for Krishna and put it around her own hair and her own neck. In fact, she'd take all the garlands and she'd wear them. And then she'd go to a well. Some say a mirror, some say a well. And she looked at herself and smiled and she would speak, I look so beautiful today.
I look so elegant, especially wearing this wonderful, wonderful garland. And she was thinking, she was rejoicing because she was so beautiful for Krishna. Sometimes we read how the gopis or the queens of Dwarka would decorate themselves so nicely with jewels, with cosmetics. And in this world, when people do that, it's usually because we want to attract people to our beauty. That's a bodily conception. But in the case of the queens of Dwarka or the gopis of Vrindavan, they wanted to make themselves super excellently beautiful for the pleasure of Krishna. It was pure unalloyed devotion. As Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna doesn't see just what we do. He sees the intention of why we do it. One person could be singing kirtan, thinking, let everyone hear what a beautiful voice I have, and let everyone adore me. And another person will be singing kirtan, thinking, I'm nothing. Krishna's given me the power to sing. Let me just enthuse everyone to love Krishna, who's in his name. I'm just an instrument. One pujari can decorate Krishna in such a way that the whole temple and the whole congregation thinks he's the best pujari. No one dresses Krishna like him. I'm going to come to the temple whenever he dresses Krishna for that. Unbelievable darshan. And another pujari is thinking, let me decorate Krishna so absolutely nicely that everybody falls in love with Krishna. Everyone's just ever so more attracted to Krishna. The intent. So Andal would put on the garlands, look in the mirror, and praise herself, her own beauty, because it would be pleasing to the Lord. One day, Vishnu Chittar was astonished. He happened to come in when Andal was wearing the garland of tulsi and flower. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. He said, this has not been offered yet. You have contaminated the garland. Now I cannot offer it. We accept Krishna's prasad. We don't give Krishna our remnants. So we went into the puja room and he had no garland for Vishnu, for Krishna. That night in a dream, Krishna appeared to him and asked, where was my tulsi garland today? Vishnu Chittar said, Andal, my daughter, I caught her wearing your garland and I even found her hairs. I found her hairs intertwined within your garland. So therefore they were desecrated. They were made impure. So I could not offer it to you, my lord. Vishnu said, desecrated? By Andal wearing that garland, she has consecrated it. Impure? She has purified it. It is my order to you. Never, ever give me any garland that was not first worn by your daughter Andal. Vishnu Chittar was very pleasantly astonished by this. And every day, after his gardening and his garland making, he would personally
placed the garlands on Undal and let her play with the garlands and let her go in the mirror and see herself in the garlands. Then she'd give it back to her father and then he would offer it to the Lord. As she grew, her love for Krishna became more and more intense. She specifically was madly, passionately in love with Govinda of Vrindavan. The intensity of her feelings of separation were very much similar to that of the gopis. Day and night, she wept, she cried, she prayed to be reunited with her Lord. The world was like a dreary void without that connection of the physical presence with the Lord. She longed, she yearned. She was so absorbed in her love and separation that, like the gopis, she would imitate Krishna's pastimes. And this is how she spent her days. Her father was very anxious to see her in this condition, day and night, just crying out Krishna's names, crying out prayers for Krishna to come. One day he asked her, "You're a girl of marriageable age now. What mortal can I marry you to?" Undal replied, "If you try to marry me to any mortal person in this world, I will die. I have given my heart to Krishna." What does a father say to that? He understood that no mortal will be married to my daughter. So he asked, "Which form of the Lord would you like to marry?" And she said, "Read to me the different forms and I'll tell you." So in the Sri Vaishnav, this is the time of the Alawars, there were 108 special forms of the Lord within this world. So he read the list of all these 108 names of the Lord. And she was listening. And at the very end, he said the name Ranganath of Rangakshetra. When that name entered her heart, her father saw tears well in her eyes. Her limbs began to tremble. Her heart instantly gave itself totally to Ranganath. And she told her father, "I will marry no one but him." Now this was perplexing too. How do you marry your daughter to a deity of the supreme absolute truth, the highest divinity? That night, he had a dream where Ranganath Swami appeared to him and said, "Do not worry. I will propose to you for your daughter." At the same time, the head priest of Rangakshetra, the Ranganath temple, had a vision. "Go to Sri Viliputur with all royal paraphernalia of the temple and bring Undal, the daughter of Vishnu Chitar, back to marry me." So the head priest had a royal procession with canopies and umbrellas and trumpets and horns and everything, and Brahmin priests chanting mantras and hymns. They went all the way to Sri to the village. And when they came to the house, they gave the message to Vishnu Chittur, who went to his deity of the Lord and asked permission. And the Lord said, whatever Ranganath wants, you should do. He made a beautiful palanquin and put his daughter in that palanquin, then put a screen so that nobody could see her. Because now he was thinking, she's the bride of God. Somebody just told me an interesting story. How true it is, I don't know, but it's nice anyway. That in one country, some Catholic nuns were complaining against the Krishna consciousness movement, that they're misleading people, and tried to ban them, and it went to court. And he said, well, why? How are they misleading people? They said that they're worshiping this Krishna. What kind of God? According to their scripture, he has 16,108 wives. And even they want to be gopis and want to be the wives of Krishna. So that means this is a bogus thing. So the representative of the devotees said, please tell us what is the vow that you take as a nun. She was silent. So somebody read, the vow of a nun is to be the chaste and faithful wife of Jesus. Said, so Jesus has millions of wives. So if there's something wrong with Krishna having 16,108 wives, then what about Jesus? So the judge dismissed the case. So Vishnu Chittur made a screen around his beloved daughter so that nobody else could see her before Ranganath. And they brought her a procession many, many miles into Sri Rangam. And there the king, Balabhadev, and all of the kingdom was there to receive her. There was a wonderful reception. They brought the palanquin into the inner sanctum of the Lord's altar. There, Vishnu Chittur lifted the screen and very softly stepped from the palanquin Andal. When the people of Sri Rangam, including the king himself, saw her beauty, not just the beauty of her body, the beauty of her soul, the beauty of her character, the beauty of her devotion, they were stunned. And with her beautiful, lotus-like, love-filled eyes, she gazed upon the lotus feet of Sri Ranganath, and then up to his beautiful smiling face. Softly she stepped forward and laid beside Sri Ranganath on his bed of Anantashesha. Then she pressed her body close to the Lord before everyone's eyes, she disappeared. She entered into the body of Ranganath. She entered into the eternal pastimes, the Leela of the Lord in the spiritual world. Seeing this, her father was struck simultaneously with joy to see his own daughter resume her position as the eternal consort of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, filled with sorrow that his daughter was gone. He returned to his village for the rest of his life. He worshiped the Lord. By pulling weeds. By planting flowers. By digging earth. By stringing garlands and offering them to his beloved. Such simple service. Whether one is serving like Maharaj Prataparudra as the king of vast provinces with mighty armies, or whether one is serving like Kolavecha Sridhar, just selling a few bananas and whatever little you have from it, offering it to Mother Ganga and the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna is Rasa Bihari. He enjoys the love of his devotee. And he enjoys showering his love upon his devotees. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here to Kanyakumari and to all the other parts of South India to give everyone the opportunity to taste the sweetness of that love, to attain that perfection beyond the joys and sorrows of material existence, to realize that we are eternal, we are a part of God, Satchit Ananda. And Krishna is all beautiful, all playful, all sweet, all loving, and is eternally calling each and every one of us back to his eternal pastimes. The ultimate happiness. Parama Karuna Pahun Duijana Nitai Gora Chandra. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are giving it. This most rare of all treasures. To everyone and anyone. This was the special feature of Lord Chaitanya's South Indian tour. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he has forever recorded it to inspire us with hope and with direction. There is infinite hope in the grace of God. And in the association of sincere devotees, we can become strengthened, empowered by that hope. Oma pavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopiva. Krishna is supremely pure. There is nothing that could ever be so impure that cannot be instantly purified by Krishna. And thus we read in the great histories of very, very horrible demoniac people being liberated by taking shelter. Dina hina yate chilo harina mudharilo thara sakshi jagai madhai. To give us hope. No reason ever to be depressed. No reason to ever be discouraged. Whatever we've done, it's done. Let's move forward. Doing the right thing. With hope in the supreme power of Krishna's grace, of Sri Radha's grace, which is fully manifested through the hearts of their devotees, and which could be fully realized through sincerely crying out the holy names. Trinadapi sunichena toror ivasi hishnuna amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. If we can just aspire for that. To want nothing beyond being the servant of the servant of the servant, to offer seva with pure love. To aspire to be humble, like a blade of grass. Forgiving, tolerant, like a tree. To offer all respect to others, and not to really care whether we get it or not. If we just have this sincerity, Krishna reveals his eternal loving form, reveals his quality, his abode, and his supreme sweetness to us. And then we will understand what Rupa Goswami and all of our acharyas like Srila Prabhupada has told. Kirtaniya Sadahari. What it means to chant the names of the Lord with love very loudly forever. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested the love of Sri Radha and the gopis. Which is, according to Srimad Bhagavat, the highest, the purest revelation of divinity. Savai pung sang paro dharamo yato bhaktir hokchiti ahoitiki aprati hataya yatma suprasidati. Unmotivated, unconditional loving service is the highest dharma. When Srila Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, in that small sentence, all the wisdom of all the great scriptures can be realized. If only we take it seriously. But we cannot chant Hare Krishna and be happy unless we're really trying to inspire other people to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Thank you very much. Shall we chant Hare Krishna and be happy?